Hibbard comes home. The pitch swung on and missed. The throw to second is in time. It's a strike him out, throw him out.
Kick it out left corner. DeAndre wide open for three. He hit it again.
Raider going deep over the middle. Caught. Rucker across midfield, and he's going to take it all the way to the house. 79 yards.
Welcome to the Second to None podcast, the A-State podcast, presented by First National Bank and Cavanaugh Auto Group. Now, here's Matt Stoltz and Brad Bobo.
Coming up, the defending Sun Belt champion volleyball team opened the season in Atlanta over the weekend. We'll talk about that. Cross country season is underway. The golf teams getting things started with their fall campaigns. But it was the season opener for the football team on Saturday. Took on SEMO, got down 10-7 early in the second quarter, but after that, the Red Wolves score 35 consecutive points before pulling the starters. They go on to win it by the final score of 42-24. Jalen Rayner was phenomenal, 26 of 32, 345 yards and three touchdowns. Defense really buckled down after a slow start. They had four straight three and outs at one point. They now turn their attention to this Saturday and a historic matchup that many people thought would never happen as they take on Arkansas at War Memorial Stadium in Little Rock. That'll be Saturday at 4. And here to talk about it, we couldn't think of a better guest for this episode. A-State's number one fan. It's the former governor of the state of Arkansas. Welcome in, Mike Beebe.
How is everybody tonight?
Man, we're doing great. So before we get into the Arkansas stuff, I know you were at the game the other day. So give us your take on what you saw in the win over SEMO.
Well, what everybody else saw, the outset of the game, the defense looked a little porous. I really was giving a lot of credit to SEMO. I thought their scheme was particularly good. I was very high on either their head coach or their offensive coordinator, whoever designed all the misdirection and all those plays that seemed to move them down the field about as fast as we went down the field on our first possession. But then, like everybody else, I came to realize that we woke up and the defense played like the defense can, and the offense never quit. So the game was really never in doubt. It was 42-10 when you put everybody else in, and SEMO scored a couple of late garbage touchdowns that should not have happened, and hopefully we'll get corrected. But all in all, it was a good opening win.
Governor, you keep up with this team, and I've told people over the years a lot of times is that if you come to practice, I'd pretty much be intentional about not standing by you because you're going to ask me questions I don't know the answer to. I mean, you're going to say, hey, you know, isn't that so-and-so over there, the walk-on from Rooster Poot? And I'm going to go, I have no idea, Governor. Now, with that being said, in this era of college sports, are they even challenging you? Are you having a hard time keeping up with rosters these days?
Absolutely. I mean, there's absolutely no way anybody other than a position coach or maybe the head coach every single day can know all these new faces and, more importantly, know how they're going to fit into a scheme. And frankly, I think Coach Jones early on has said that this is the one year he doesn't have any idea what they're going to look like. I mean, you see them in practice, but you know, with so many new people, and particularly some new starters, until those lights come on, you just don't know what's going to happen.
Been interesting just watching him, and he's talked about how he's never coached a team as hard as he has in preseason practice. But when you have 70 newcomers, you're trying to implement your culture and what you want to do. But you know, you've watched this the last few years. Coach Jones is in year 5 at A-State. What's impressed you about what he's been able to do here?
Well, it impressed me that he inherited a situation that wasn't the best. You know, when Blake's wife got sick, and I understand, you know, what happened, but things had changed to the point that the cupboard was relatively bare. Certainly the culture had not sustained as much as Blake would have liked, I think, and as much as it did early on. And his first few years were pretty rocky. What's impressed me is that slowly and surely he's progressed to build that culture and build a team to the point that every year it's gotten a little bit better.
Well, let me ask you, because we're going to talk about a lot of stuff here. You know, you've got more than one alma mater because of you're a learned guy. But, you know, you are an A-State guy. What's the place mean to you, or kind of how would life have been different for you had you not been able to get from Newport to A-State?
Well, I said this so many times, it's not going to come as a shock to many people, but if it wasn't for A-State, there's no telling what would have happened to me. I think A-State's responsible for everything that's ever happened to me professionally and economically all through my life. And I'll be, as I've said before, I don't think I can ever repay it enough for what ASU's meant to me. It's given me the opportunity to get a quality education, given me the opportunity to end up in law school and end up with a quality of life that I never could have dreamed about growing up. And then we all know what's happened politically. Never would have had that chance. And frankly, even though it's not a elected position, my first foray into anything political was when I was as a kid, just about 26, 27 years old, looked like I was 18, put on the ASU board by Dale Bumpers, who frankly didn't know me from Adam and had no reason to do it. I didn't have any money, hadn't done anything for him. But combination of things kind of came together, and it was his last appointment before he left the governor's office, and he'd already fulfilled all of his obligations. And he said, well, why not put this kid on this board? And and that's exactly what happened, and that's what got me started, at least with a toe in the water, so to speak, for the politics.
I want to go back to right around that time, because there's been a lot of talk over the last few weeks leading up to the season about the 1975 team, the team that went undefeated. And we've had a lot of interviews over the last several weeks and months. Rob Wiley, the former play-by-play voice we had on the podcast a few weeks ago, and he told a great story about how you helped get him in that position back in 1975. But what are your memories of that team?
That was so special. It was a time in our history that I don't think anybody ever really thought would happen in terms of an undefeated season against quality opponents that ended up by one service. We were like number two, tied with Arizona State, and two ASUs that were the only undefeated schools at that time at the end of the season. You know, that was my second year, I think, on the board. I ended up going to all the games. All those road games, I traveled with the team. I never will forget a duck landing on that artificial turf in Cincinnati at halftime because it was a monsoon. The Cincinnati game was probably the closest we came to not having an undefeated season. But I go all the way back to the very first game, and they had this safety that couldn't throw the ball from here to the end of the driveway named David Hines, and they're going to put him at quarterback. And what's going on with this stuff? He can't. But they end up leading the nation in rushing. Magician running the triple option out of the eye, which was innovative. You know, the triple option had been run traditionally out of either the veer or the wishbone. And here comes Arkansas State running it out of the eye so that you still got a couple of wideouts out there. It was pretty innovative, I think, at the time. And the results were pretty phenomenal in terms of leading the entire country in rushing.
I want to hear some of your other memories, just your favorite Arkansas State football teams over the years. Obviously, after the 75 season, we had some great years with Coach Lacewell, and then such a special run starting in 2011, going all the way through 2019 with the 9 straight bowl games and the 5 conference championships there. But is there a point in history that kind of stands out to you more than any other?
Yeah, that December game against Middle for the conference championship that set the record for attendance at the stadium. Pretty doggone special. I don't know that I've ever seen us play a more complete football game. Think, what was it, 43-0, 45-0?
45-0 was the final.
You know, the rumor was, and I think somebody's belied this rumor, but the rumor was Applin allegedly said at coin toss, this game's over.
Well, he's never denied.
Yeah, that's right. He'll not confirm it, but he sure as heck won't deny it.
I mean, it wasn't the Sisters of the Poor we were playing. Both teams undefeated in the conference. Both teams fighting for the conference championship. And then all of a sudden you wake up and you just score at will and they can't move the ball at all. And as I said, I can't remember a more complete game that ASU's ever played. I remember I was in the Army and I was listening to the 1970 game against Wichita, which was our first foray against what was then the major college, Wichita State. But Division 1A. And that was pretty convincing as well. But nothing like what I've ever seen was like that middle game in December of 2012.
First National Bank's roots run deep in Northeast Arkansas. We began a single Paragould branch with one idea: customers first. By focusing on the best products banking has to offer and valuing the highest level of service, we're now 23 branches across Arkansas and Tennessee. As First National Bank grows, our roots only get deeper, and the mission remains the same. You first, always. Learn more about our products and services at fnbank.net. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Continuing to visit with former Governor Mike Beebe here on the Second to None podcast, presented by First National Bank and by Kavanaugh Auto Group. You can check out Kavanaugh's entire selection of new and pre-owned vehicles at KavanaughCars.com. All right, let's talk about what we have on the horizon here. And we've established what an A-State guy you are. You love your school. You love the state of Arkansas. Did you ever think you'd actually see the day that A-State played the Razorbacks?
I can't really say that I ever thought it'd happen, no. It was always kind of way off in the future. I will tell you this. One of the two most exciting sporting events I've ever been at was the Arkansas State-Arkansas basketball game in NIT in 1987. It went to overtime. I mean, that was a heck of a experience. But no, not on the football field.
So there's a little bit of time passed. We can ask you things we never ask in a public forum, probably. But when you get elected governor, there were folks, probably Arkansas State people, that thought, oh, Governor Beebe's going to get in there and he's going to make this game happen. What was your take on that and that aspect of like trying to involve the legislature on this particular topic when you were in the big chair?
Well, I never really seriously considered doing that. I never thought that it was the state's role to dictate schedules for schools, although other states had done that. But I will tell you that back when I was in the state Senate, again, I think this was in 87 as well, there was a push on the House side. It never got to us on the Senate, but the House actually passed out of committee a bill that required the teams to play. And Broyles and company got so fired up about it that apparently they threw it back in committee the next day over in the House. And I think that's the subject of a Democrat Gazette column that's coming up from a really well-respected columnist, John Brummett, because I know he's asked me about that, about my recollection of it. I didn't have any direct knowledge of it. It's kind of hearsay because, as I said, it was on the other side of the House. I was in the Senate, and it was the House committee that was doing all that stuff. But I think a colleague of mine in the Jonesboro icon, Senator Bookout, knew more about it than I did at the time. But no, I really never thought it happened.
So did you ever have conversations with Frank Broyles on this topic?
No, I never did.
And I know you've heard all the arguments from the Arkansas side, but have you ever really understood the resistance to this game?
Yeah. No, I understood it. I mean, they had a captive audience. You know, when you're the only game in town, when you legitimately can say that you're the only major college program in the state, you don't want to split fan loyalty, or you don't want to split allegiance or money or anything else. I understood where they were coming from. We represent to some degree a threat to that dominance. I never thought it was a serious threat. Arkansas was so far ahead money-wise and history-wise. But notwithstanding that, I understood where they were coming from, you bet.
You mean people with monopolies just don't go looking to give them up?
No, they don't. They kind of like the situation.
What would Bill Keady's reaction to these two teams?
I was gonna ask the same.
You know, I love the guy. He and I were in high school together. He and I were fraternity brothers at ASU. What a guy. He's an all-state quarterback. He goes to the all-star game. He's got a scholarship to ASU to play quarterback. He goes to the all-star game. He gets his knee torn up, holding on an extra point in the all-star game. So he's injured. He ends up never playing a down. And the only time he ever had the A-State uniform on was picture taking his freshman year. That was back when a four-year scholarship was what you got. It wasn't year to year. So he got a free ride, 4 years scholarship to go to school, never played a down, and was the best dang intramural quarterback that we've ever seen on the intramural field at Arkansas State. The funny thing, ironically, the other best quarterback we were all playing at the time was Lambda Chi had a quarterback that was our starting shortstop on the baseball team named Jimbo Callaway.
Oh, yeah.
Who was Hall High School's all-star quarterback, but he came to ASU not on a football scholarship, but on a baseball scholarship and played shortstop. Had that arm that he could have played football, but he was a baseball player. And between Keedy and Callaway, he had a lot of talent out there on the dang intramural field.
I'm not surprised. I knew Coach was coming up because, again, outside of Arkansas State, for the three of us here, our other kind of common bond was a friendship with Bill Keedy. What would he be like this week leading up to this game in Little Rock?
That's how the cow ate the cabbage. he'd have more Keedyisms, and you ought to get Jennifer on the phone.
Oh, yeah.
But he would be excited. He'd be like the rest of us thought, well, never thought it'd happen. I got to tell you, though, to some extent, it's less historic than it would have been 25 or 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Playing Arkansas 25 or 30 years ago for an Arkansas State fan was so unique. But after you've played Michigan and Ohio State and Alabama and Auburn and after you've played all these teams time and time again, LSU, after you beat Texas A&M, after you beat Kansas State, some of the hype that had existed about it, other than the in-state issues, but some of the hype about, you know, playing that quality of an opponent is not as heightened as it would have been 25 years ago, because Arkansas State has played those schools, done well with them, got killed by some of them, but also competed well. And so to that extent, it's not as historic as it would have otherwise been.
One more thing on Keedy here. I remember, and I'm sure Brad remembers, us all going over to Newport one night, and he was being inducted into the Newport yep. Hall of Fame. And Governor, I thought you had the best description of Bill Keedy that I've ever heard. You got up and you were doing the induction speech, and you said, "I've only known a couple of people in my life that have true charisma, but Bill Keedy is one of those people."
I don't think I've ever disclosed this publicly, but this seems like a good forum to do it.
Yes.
There were two people that I put in. I said I never met John F. Kennedy, obviously. Allegedly, he had it, and I would have liked to have seen it. But, you know, charisma was that. I defined it as that magnetism where people just wanted to be around you.
Yeah.
You attracted people, and Keedy was one of the two. You know who the other one was? An ASU connection, too.
Who's that?
Johnny Allison.
Really?
And he was also a fraternity brother. I mean, and you know, Dean Moore used to say about our fraternity, half of them are going to be famous and the other half are going to be in prison. And I'm not sure he was. We had a heck of a group. I ended up putting a couple of them over the course of the time on the ASU Board of Trustees.
I'm wondering about this Saturday now. And I go back to those early days. I had just started at Arkansas State, and I remember some of my first games in the booth. I'd turn around, and you were sitting there. And I came to find out that the governor of the state of Arkansas is sitting right behind me because, as much as anything, he just wanted to get away from everybody else and concentrate on the game. So with the sellout crowd in Little Rock on Saturday, where are you going to be sitting? How are you going to be able to focus on the game?
Well, it's not going to be a problem, and nobody's going to know where I am. There's a couple stories about that. First of all, when I was sitting in that booth, I was thinking the state senate for 20 years. So from 1983 to 2003, I was in the Senate, and I don't remember what year.
I started in 05.
By then, I was attorney general. But there have been several funny stories about me at those games. Years ago, when I was in the Senate, I was driving back to Searcy. My wife was very quiet over in the city. She's kind of sold up. And I said, "What's wrong? What are you mad? What's wrong?" She said, "I'm mad at you." I said, "What the hell did I do?" She said, "Well, you were rude to Les." Les Wyatt was president of school at the time. I said, "I wasn't rude to Les. I never even saw Les." She said, "He came and sat down beside you for 15 minutes. I said, "Ginger, I never saw him." I wasn't as bad in terms of concentration in football as I was basketball, because you're so far away, you can't yell at officials in football. You can yell, but they can't hear you. Basketball is another story, and it's another Les Wyatt story. Ryan Waters was the brand new commissioner of the conference. His first trip to Jonesboro, Arkansas, his first basketball game, Les brought him over to at halftime to introduce him. I was fired up because I thought to officiate. Of course, if my mother had been a basketball official, I would not have liked her probably because that's just something about basketball. No, I mean, they do a good job, you know. It's all fast. They're going to make mistakes. Well, everybody's a better official, right?
Yep.
From the stands than those guys actually have. But anyway, I was fired up. Les brought Ryan Waters over at halftime and introduced him. And I said, well, Mr. Commissioner, welcome to ASU. But I got to tell you, if you don't fire every one of those officials, when this game's over, they ought to fire you. And that was his first. It was his first trip to Jonesboro. Had a great
welcome to Jonesboro.
Years later, he had a great trip. You remember when basketball used to play the conference tournament down in Springs?
Sure.
Well, one of those tournaments was his last. It was his swan song. He was leaving the conference, retiring. And he brought me a whistle and a striped shirt.
Wow.
I guess it exhibited a pretty good sense of humor on his part and forgiveness as far as that's concerned. Because I was way out of line, you know. I had kind of lost it.
Hey, before we get out of here, and because you've done so much from, as you said, your mid to late 20s on for the place, you are justifiably known as the first fan, but let me just get your take on things at Arkansas State. And that's campus-wide, where they continue to set enrollment records, and athletics, where kind of everything looks to be going in the right direction.
I don't want to steal anybody's thunder because it's going to come from Todd Shields, who incidentally I think is an absolute treasure for Arkansas State. Todd Shields is a wonderful chancellor and done a great job. I don't want to steal his thunder, but he's going to tell you next week about record enrollment. We have come so far in that regard. We're about to receive those final site visits and accreditations for the new vet school. You know, NYIT is serving Arkansas well with additional positions that we have such a shortage of. I got to tell you, there's a great Bioscience Institute story that I don't know if you got time, but very quickly. I was in the Senate and, you know, Huckabee was governor and they'd come out with a chart plan. And the chart plan was primarily devised to create healthcare issues support for the tobacco settlement when all those tobacco dollars ended up getting distributed among the states. And so UAMS had really come up with the chart plan. So Joyce Roten, the famous tough lady. I didn't like her. She didn't like me. We didn't like each other. But she was the famous lobbyist for the University of Arkansas system. And she was a Nick Wilson girl. They were close. Nick and I had famously never been very close. That's putting it nicely. And so they come up with the chart plan. And she comes to my office with the head of UAMS and Tom Butler, who was the health department guy, and said, all right, what's it going to take for ASU to get this through the Senate? By this time, I had some degree of leadership in the Senate. And she said, what's it going to take for ASU to get this bill through the Senate? And I said, well, they got to be equal player. I knew we couldn't be the prime player. We had to be. I always tried to make whatever Fayetteville got, I thought Jonesboro ought to get it too. So, you know, it's kind of 50-50 deal. And I said, well, they got to be an equal player. She said, well, tell them put together a plan. So I did. ASU put together a plan. She came back and she said, I know you don't like me. I don't like you. You've never trusted me and I've never trusted you. But she said, ASU's plan's awful. She used some language that you don't want to hear right now. But she said, ASU's plan's terrible. And she said, if you will just trust me that on this one thing. She said, I'll help. I'll put it together and we'll make it work. And I said, go for it. She did, and U of A did. And that's how ASU got to be an equal player. That's how the research for the biosciences money got to be at ASU. That's another academic achievement over and above. That doggone liberal arts building now on the campus, you know, the big new liberal arts building.
Right.
You remember how many years we had steel up with nothing else? We kept stealing money, and it's stealing in a good way. I mean, we weren't stealing for people, but we kept putting money back for that, and telling ASU to go ahead and start working on it so they wouldn't spend it on something else until we could. Finally, I think we ended up with about $17 million in state dollars, and the rest was bonded by the university. But if we hadn't gotten $3 and $4 and $5 and $6 million every biennium and made them spend it on construction to go along, we'd have never gotten that building. There are countless stories like that. But the academic side, the enrollment side, the growth of its influence on not just Northeast Arkansas, but all of Arkansas, is something that we all ought to take a great deal of pride in, because ASU is an economic engine for so much, and certainly for that area of the state, but for so much. And I encourage you, if you don't do anything else, pay $25 and get your license plate with a Red Wolf on it. We got three cars with an ASU license plate on it. Cost $25. What's that going to be to anybody's budget? $25 a year. And what does that show every time you drive down the highway, every time you pull into a Walmart parking lot, wherever you are, whether it's Benton or Bryant? I know Shane's got them. He's showing them off all the time. But all our people, just spend $25 and get a dang license plate.
Well, there's a lot to be proud of when you have that license plate and you're showing off that Red Wolf. And it's a great time for Arkansas State. It's going to be a great atmosphere Saturday. And, Governor, we've really, really enjoyed this visit. Can't wait to see you on Saturday.
Well, you just keep doing what you're doing. You do a great job, Matt. I always like people that could describe a game and make you feel like you were there watching it, even when you weren't there. Even if it was five states away, you make somebody feel like they're right there on it, and I appreciate you.
Get huge savings now at every Cavanaugh dealership. Cavanaugh has a great selection of late model, low mileage, certified pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs, and most are still under factory warranty. We have every make and every model, so you're sure to find the vehicle you want. And when you buy at Cavanaugh, every new and used purchase comes with 1 year of free maintenance. Plus, we buy cars. Bring a vehicle, get a check. Come see us today at one of our dealerships or go to CavanaughCars.com.
And we welcome you back to the Second to None podcast presented by Cavanaugh Auto Group and by First National Bank, where they put you first always. Lots of stuff going on in the world of A-State athletics. Now, soccer had a game scheduled at UCA this past Thursday, but it was canceled due to weather and poor field conditions. That was in the statement.
I'd call it unfortunate, because there was a point in time, actually.
I didn't know the weather was bad.
Well, remember Thursday, you know, there was a line of showers, and we were right on it. The forecast leading into Thursday was, you know, there were going to be places in the state that were going to get a lot of rain, and we were in Jonesboro right on that line. So much so that that's why on Wednesday the decision was made to move Order of the Pack from Centennial Bank Stadium inside to the arena because of the forecast.
Right.
Then it turns out, you know, we got no rain. There was a point in time where they actually talked about moving this match against UCA to Jonesboro. And then UCA decided, no, they think they're going to be okay. We can go in. And then right about the time I think we were getting ready to head down there, they called back and said, no, we've taken more rain than we thought. Our field's too wet.
So soccer didn't play last week. They'll be back in action this Sunday at 1 when they host
a long delay.
UAPB Sunday. That's the final tune-up before conference play begins.
They already had a big, like, it was already going to be from one Thursday to the next Sunday. Already, like, it already had this weird gap.
A 10-day stretch.
And now, without the UCA match, yeah, that's a really odd stretch of time they're going without a match.
Well, volleyball played three matches in 3 days over the weekend. They opened the regular season at the Georgia Tech Classic in Atlanta. Coach Gerwig certainly not backing down from a tough schedule to open up the season. Lost in five sets Friday against Ole Miss. And then they came back Saturday. They swept Wofford. And then they took on the host team on Sunday, Georgia Tech, who was ranked 22nd in the country. And what a match that was.
Yeah.
A-State wins the first set 27-25. And then Georgia Tech wins the next three sets, but it was 25-22, 25-21, and 25-22. So they were all extremely close. The team obviously didn't want to go to Atlanta and drop two out of three, but you got to be encouraged with what they did against a top 25 team.
Yeah, I guarantee you. They gave Georgia Tech all he wanted. And I haven't got a chance to talk with him. My guess is he's probably not real happy about dropping the Ole Miss match, a five-setter. So my guess is, like, if you want to redo it, that one, it's probably that one. But, yeah, to bounce back from that, get the sweep on Saturday, and then, yeah, give Georgia Tech, a nationally ranked team, all they wanted. That's a pretty encouraging weekend, I'd say, overall. And then, you know, listen, we need people right now. We start talking about the weekend, and rightfully so. But before we get to the weekend, even if you're headed to Little Rock Friday, okay. But, like, Thursday night, we need folks at First National Bank Arena, because this team is playing their regular season home opener, and they've got another SEC opponent coming in here.
Yeah, Missouri, 7 o'clock, First National Bank Arena on Thursday. And we play Mizzou again on Friday. Now, Dwight Yoakam has the arena on Friday night, but the volleyball team will take on Mizzou at Valley View's Blazer Arena Friday at 6.
No disrespect to Dwight, but if we're going to have to play a home match somewhere other than the arena, I'd rather say it's because Dr. Ashley McBride is playing at First National Bank Arena, she is. She's on that show. And be looking, and by the time you've heard this, maybe you've already seen it, but there's going to be some stuff. There's going to be a food drive, I think, conducted with the match, you know, out of Valley View for sure, where taking part in a food drive can not only get you that match, I think it'll actually get you a ticket down the line for one of the Texas State matches, which would be a key Sun Belt weekend. So be on the lookout for that. But yeah, big weekend for volleyball to get Mizzou in here for two.
Cross country opened their season this past weekend in Memphis at the City Auto Memphis Twilight Cross Country Classic. The men finishing 4th out of 12, women finishing 4th out of 13 teams. Men's golf going to open the season. Their fall schedule begins at the Whirlwind Invitational in Maricopa, Arizona. That'll be this coming Monday and Tuesday. Women's golf also opening up their fall slate. They'll be in Pawleys Island, South Carolina at the Golf Week Fall Challenge that begins on Sunday. And that leads us back to football. We talked about it with Governor Beebe earlier. War Memorial Stadium in Little Rock this Saturday. I put it out on social media Sunday. I had never known exactly how many states had multiple FBS teams. It's 32.
Okay.
31 of those states have seen in-state FBS matchups. Only one has not, but that will change this Saturday.
Let's park here and talk a minute. Just us. A couple different things. Number one, I thought it was an interesting take, and one you've heard from several places, from Governor Beebe, that maybe a little of the historical shine is off this. And I agree that it's not at peak level. For the reasons he mentioned and others, it's interesting to hear him have that observation.
Mm-hmm.
But to your point, it's still an awfully big deal because of what you just said. Only state in the union that's never done it. And so it's a list. It's going to be good this Saturday finally be able to wad up that list and throw it away. Who knows when it'll happen again? You know, there's a lot going on. Folks are probably well versed on Arkansas's situation with Little Rock. This is their last contracted game down there after, you know, deep, deep history in that stadium. So we had 4 years notice that this one was happening, and obviously we haven't got any notice that it's happening again. So hopefully fans from both sides can come and enjoy it Saturday afternoon.
A-State alumni tailgate at the Little Rock Zoo. That begins
at
11.
That's going to be huge.
That will be fantastic. What a great way to start the day. I love the fact that we're doing a Red Wolf walk for a road game. It's technically a road game, but yeah, with all the people that are there, I think it should make for a great scene.
Yeah, so for anybody, the lay of the land there, you know, the zoo is just right off the south end of War Memorial Stadium. There's a parking lot and a tennis center in between them. But there's a staircase that goes down from that tennis center parking lot right into the lot at War Memorial near the gate where we'll enter the stadium. If you walk down those steps from the zoo to War Memorial, you're going to be right at the gate we're coming in. So we'll be scheduled to get there at 1:45, 2 hours and 15 minutes before kick. So team will plan on getting there at about 1:45. I know the Sound of the Natural State is going to go play down at the gate and encourage any fans that want to join them to come on and welcome the team in. They open gates 90 minutes early, so gates will open at 2:30 Saturday. And the real big thing I want our people to know about, and then I got one more thing I want to discuss about this. Maybe folks have been to a Little Rock game, maybe they haven't. I do think that next week, when we're sitting here talking about it and we're talking about Iowa State, people are going to understand how good our parking setup is. The big winner out of this is the people that run our parking.
I can't wait to get back in Parkinson Centennial
Bank
Stadium. Yeah,
there's going to be some of that, because there are people that think they don't get to park close here.
You know, you and I have made some really long walks in the past for road games. Mm-hmm. And like the media parking lot, in most cases, is a really good lot. But still, we've walked some long distances to get into stadiums, a whole lot further than you have to walk here.
So the bulk of the parking, as folks may know, is, you know, on the old War Memorial Golf Course. That's going to open. They're going to open that at 6 a.m. It's $25 cash only to park on the golf course at War Memorial. I just want to make sure our people have all the information. There has been some talk that they think that by 10 o'clock, it'll be full and they won't take any more.
Wow.
Because it's a big tailgating spot, too. So come in, you know, off of 6:30, you want to come in from there to get on Fair Park and get on the golf course if you can get there before it gets full. The zoo is, 11 to 3, I think, are the hours of the tailgate party at the zoo. You can still get tickets to that. You can get, like, a zoo admission ticket, which is just $10. The zoo is going to have all their concessions open. Like, there's going to be catered, and the people bought tickets for catering and stuff, too. But even if you didn't get one of those, the zoo is going to have all its concession options available. So you can get by with the $10 ticket to the tailgate that just gets you zoo admission. The zoo would be closed otherwise. We've talked about this a lot. The zoo wouldn't be open if it wasn't open for Arkansas State. So it's a really unique setting for a tailgate party. Lots of folks are making their plans to be there. And then I'm going to get you in on the question I get. I've honestly been surprised the number of times I've gotten this question, including already today, by the time we're sitting here recording this podcast. A lot of discussion, a lot of people wondering if we're going to tell Arkansas State fans what color to wear Saturday. And I've been in a lot of conversations about this with people who would be making that decision. And I'm going to tell you, we can't come to a consensus.
Man, I see where you're coming from.
And here, because here's the deal.
We're going to wear white.
We'll be in a white jersey. And I have found out our fans, seemingly the color our fans have the least amount of A-State stuff in, is white. I get the folks in Little Rock have dubbed this game Red in the Rock. I understand people are going, well, we're going to wear red. You know, the other team's in red. Yeah, that's true. And then, you know, that leaves black. Well, it turns out the weather's going to be awesome, but for the bulk of this planning, we're just thinking, are we really going to tell our people to show up in black at 4 o'clock on September 6th? Well, the reason it's kicking off at 4 o'clock is it's probably going to be 142 degrees. Now, that's turned out to probably not be the case.
So the high is 76 at this point.
Yeah, it was going to be 80 or 81 Saturday, too, and it still found its way to 90. I mean, I don't know how that happened.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to take the risk and wear black if I'm sitting in the stands.
So it's a bit of a bind. Yeah. And here's the truth. We just keep getting asked, what color are we telling people to wear? What color are we telling people to wear? And I'll be honest, when I say this, I'm going to say, I don't care what color you wear. And I don't mean that bad. I just mean, just come make noise. I don't think it's going to be any problem figuring out
who's cheering for who.
Who's cheering for who and where the A-State fans are. Whether you're wearing red, white, black, polka dots, stripes, houndstooth, seersucker, I don't know, whatever.
And I understand every angle of this, but yeah, I think the noise factor is what's going to tell everybody apart.
I agree.
Fun episode, man. That was a great conversation with Governor Beebe. Well, I love the fact that the thing I love about Governor Beebe, well, there's a lot of them, but the fact that we've got all these incredible suites, we got the club area. I know he thinks it's all great, but he wants that seat in the first row of the upper deck, which I think is the best seat in the house.
I agree.
He wants, as we talked about, to be able to concentrate on the game.
He has paid for that seat since the place opened, and I agree with you. I think he's got immaculate taste. I think he has picked the best seat in the house. That little swath there of upper level chair backs at our stadium, I think are the best seats in it. It would baffle me that those wouldn't stay sold out full, but it is the best seat in the house. He's got great taste. Then you go back to, I mean, there were times we were always real mindful, and I'm not saying he never did it, because I'm sure he did along the way, but in 19 years or whatever of trying to find people to interview at halftime, we almost never asked him, because I understood that, like, he came to watch the game, and God bless him. And then, you know, he helped me out when I first went back in the athletic department in 22, you know, he and I hooked up for a video we put out the week of homecoming. That would not have happened without his cooperation, without his willingness to narrate it. Because here's the truth, honest to God, it took me probably 15 minutes tops to write the script to that video, because from the time I had the idea, the voice in my head reading that script was Mike Beebe. If he'd have said, hey, I can't do it, or didn't want to do it, the video just wouldn't have happened.
Right.
There was no plan B. It literally, it was his voice.
It was perfect.
It was his voice in my head the whole time, and it would not have happened otherwise. So, yeah, love that guy. Appreciate his time, and I hope he has a good time Saturday along with the rest of us.
Really, really looking forward to Saturday. Can't wait to talk about it next week on our next edition of the Second to None podcast, presented by Cavanaugh Auto Group and First National Bank.